Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Blue Plate Special with host Terry Lynn Koop. Tonight, I have something different for you. Speculative fiction writer Melanie Metters is on the menu, and I'm pleased to serve her up. She's a writer of spec fiction and a lover of geeky things. Living in a 100-year-old house in central Massachusetts has got to be full of quirks and surprises. She's been known to befriend wandering garden gnomes, do battle with metal-eating squirrels, and has been called a superhero on more than one occasion. And she's a science geek, too. She studied physics and astronomy at Northern Arizona University and uses that education in her writing. She's a co-editor on the Mech Age of Steel anthology, has had short fiction published in Circle Magazine, The Wheel, and Prick of the Spindle, and was a finalist for the 2014 Memorial Science Fiction Contest. Most recently, her short story, A Wholehearted Halfling, was published in the heroic fantasy anthology Champions of Atalus. She blogs at Geek Mom and the Once and Future podcast, and you can find her on Facebook and Twitter at Melody Metters. Hello, how are you doing tonight?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, fantastic. And thank you so much for coming on. I've been looking forward to this all week.
No problem.
Because I want to ask you the question, what is speculative fiction?
Well, that is the question, isn't it? Well, speculative fiction covers a lot of stuff. Basically, you can think about the name speculative fiction and ask yourself, what fiction isn't speculative? Because isn't all fiction kind of made up? But speculative fiction involves things that don't really exist in this real world as we know it. So it includes science fiction, fantasy, and horror, as well as some other, you know, various little subgenres. There's weird fiction now and all kinds of things that pop up. So basically it's fiction where you can't take away the element that is like fantasy or science fiction. You can't take that out of the story and have the story still make sense.
Okay. That actually does make sense, because I do know you like to write about monsters.
Yeah.
You like fiction involved with monsters. What kind of monsters?
Well, I generally deal with the whole gamut of monsters. I play a lot of role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons, and of course there's lots of monsters in there with beholders and dragons and all kinds of critters. So I always love exploring those things, trolls, goblins, ogres. And then growing up, I watched like tons of monster movies like Godzilla and King Kong and Gamera and just countless things. Some of them like super, super bad with the rubber costumes and everything. And I always loved like Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's one of my favorites. So, you know, it's just a fun thing to explore in fiction, because there's so many aspects of monsters. I mean, there's the monster within, there's the monster without, all kinds of things.
Well, and in Mech Age of Steel, it says that it is a collection of 24 mecha-inspired short stories in the spirit of Pacific Rim. What does that mean?
So Pacific Rim is a movie that has giant robots that people ride in fighting giant monsters. And so Mech Age of Steel was actually sort of a follow-up to another anthology that was called Kaiju Rising Age of Monsters. And so the Monster anthology, which was edited by Nick Sharps and Tim Markwitz, dealt mostly with the monster side of things, and Mech dealt with the robot side of things, the big, like, mechanical suits that people would wear that are huge, that are big enough to fight the giant monsters.
Oh, cool. When I think of that, I think back to the days when I was watching Transor Z on TV, Transor Z cartoons. Am I in the right territory with that?
Yeah, I mean, what started my whole love for that stuff was when I would rush home from school to watch Voltron, Defender of the Universe, which is a cartoon where, you know, five robotic lions combine to become one giant robot that, you know, fights evil and all kinds of beasts and monsters that the bad guy sends off to this planet. And then Transformers and Robotech and things like that. You know, I loved watching stuff like that when I was a kid.
So that's what got you interested in editing on this anthology?
Yeah, it was an anthology that I actually wanted to write a story for, but it was full by the time, you know, I had discovered it. And then there were some difficulties with, you know, with the publisher, with staffing and the editors and stuff like that. And just by chance, I was invited to become a co-editor on it. So I was like, yay. And there's like so many awesome, awesome stories in there. I'm so glad I had that opportunity.
It looks like it. It really looks fantastic. And again, I'm totally down with you on that, of being a fan of Voltron, Transformers, et cetera, too. So I'm going to have to check that anthology out because I just didn't really know what it was about before. Now, what is this heroic anthology, heroic fantasy anthology that you're part of?
Oh, well, that's going back to my RPG side, role-playing games. Italtis is a world in which a role-playing game was developed in. And it's a lot like Dungeons & Dragons, but it's a completely new world. And so it has a lot of races like dwarves and humans and elves and halflings, and there's some brand new races in there. And so it's heroic fantasy, which means that it's kind of like, you think of like stories like Conan and Dragon Slayer and things like that, and people fighting monsters, stuff like that.
Cool. One thing I noticed, because you blog for a site called the Once and Future Podcast.
Yep.
And this month's was about The Hobbit. Your post this month was about The Hobbit. And the first line just caught my eye. It says, if you've read my fiction, you know how much I like writing about people who are smaller. Why don't you tell me about that?
Yeah. So basically, I don't know why, but I think it has to do with the concept of an unlikely hero and things like that. A lot of my stories deal with people who are smaller in stature. So my story in Champions of Italtis is called The Wholehearted Halfling. And it has to do with, you know, someone who is small rising above their physical stature to become a hero in their own right. And actually, my story for a new anthology that I'm doing right now for Kaiju Rising Age of Monsters 2 is also about a halfling who fights a huge monster that is, you know, many, many, many times larger than herself. And so, you know, I always like exploring the aspect of, you know, how can a smaller person be a hero just as much as, you know, a full-grown big guy?
And why does that appeal to you?
I have no idea. I was always, like, the tallest girl in my class. And I never really had that... you know, like sometimes girls, you know, it's like, oh, you're so cute and whatever. And I never had that. Like, you know, people never said that I was really cute when I was younger because, you know, I was just a tall girl and, you know, I was thin as a rail, super tall. You know, so I never really had that, but it's something that I always admired about just how people can just rise up above any of their, you know, physical aspects of themselves. And you know, I always enjoyed reading The Hobbit and I'm blanking on another story, but you know, these things where people just, you know, don't think much about them. They underestimate them at first, but then they, you know, surprise them in the end, and you know, they're like, hey, look, at I can do this too, you don't judge me by my size.
No, I think that's great, and it's And just another way to look at it, it's the, like you said, it's the unlikely hero.
Yeah.
And that's always a great subject. So what are you working on now?
Well, after I finish my Kaiju Rising story, I actually have a story, a novel idea that deals with, guess what?
What?
This one has a dwarf. And someone, I can't decide, I believe it's a human who lives in a halfling community. And so they're going to have some adventures. And what that story entails is how ordinary people can have magic, not just wizards or whatever, that there's magic in all of us, not just super special, high, you know, the high elf sorcerers aren't the only ones that can be magical.
Well, and they're so, sometimes they're just insufferable anyway, because they're so full of themselves.
Right.
And you mentioned again, I am fantasy illiterate. I'm the first one to admit to it. What's a halfling?
Oh, so a halfling is what people started calling hobbits so that they wouldn't get sued.
Uh-huh.
Well, a halfling is someone who is about 3 feet tall and has furry feet, and they, like, they're kind of homebodies and they're pretty modest people as far as, you know, kind of country bumpkins. And actually, there is a word that came from Scots, the Scots language. It is, I believe, Hofflin, which some people claim that halfling came from. And what that means is kind of a country bumpkin teenager who's neither a man or a boy, so he's kind of half of both.
And again, fits right in with your kind of unlikely hero, reluctant hero trope that seems to be kind of the thread through a lot of your writing.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I had fun with in my my Kaiju Rising story was that, you know, my character wears an apron and she's over there fighting this giant monster and she's just like straightening out her apron and making sure it's not wrinkled and then proceeds on to fight.
Now, you mentioned there's going to be Kaiju Rising 2. What is Kaiju?
Yeah.
What is Kaiju?
Let me
rewind.
Yeah, that is a giant monster. It's a Japanese term. And they're the ones who came up with, like, Godzilla and King Kong and Ghidra and Mothra and all that. So Kaiju means just a giant freaking monster.
Okay, technical terms.
Yeah.
And then, but still, even in that one, when you're in this anthology writing about giant freaking monsters, you still have your unlikely small hero.
Yeah. Yep. It's just, I mean, I tried writing a different story. It didn't take.
No, I love it. And you have an entry into the second edition of it.
Yeah, I have a story in Kaiju Rising 2, which is actually currently on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty pleased to be part of that. There's going to be stories from Seanan McGuire and Dan Wells, Jeremy Robinson, ML Brennan, Marie Brennan. There's like a ton of really awesome authors in there. So,
and that Kickstarter is coming up to end pretty soon, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's only like 5 days left, so.
But it's getting close, isn't it?
Yeah, it's getting close. Usually there's a bump in the last couple days, you know, when people said, oh, now it's time to go and back it, so.
And isn't a Kickstarter like this really just kind of the equivalent of a pre-order? I mean, if people want to go find the Kickstarter for this, what you're basically going to be doing is, I know that there's different levels, but you're basically going to be ordering a copy of the book, correct? At the more basic levels.
Yeah, I mean, and we kept the Kickstarter's pretty simple. So it's mostly just, you know, there's a level for the e-books and then level for the physical books. And you can also get, like, editions of, like, Kaiju Rising 1 as well. And then we're going to have a very limited edition of a hardcover, with a slip case and things like that. So
go ahead and spell that. So if anybody wanted to go look it up on Kickstarter, they could find it.
Okay. Yeah. It's KAIJU and then Rising, RISING. And if you just look up that keyword, those two keywords, it'll come up in search.
Okay. So anybody who's listening who's interested in grabbing a copy of that, get yourself on over to the Kickstarter. And basically, again, it's a pre-order, depending on if you want the ebook, the soft cover, or you want to go all out Cadillac style and get the special edition hardcover, because it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Is Kaju 1 still in print? Can people get copies of that?
Yep, you can get a copy right on Amazon.
Okay, and same thing, just go look it up, Kaju Rising, and the first edition will pop up.
Yeah,
cool, and that's the same thing, like Mech Age of Steel. I see it. Was it put out in ebook or is it just paperback?
It should be an ebook too.
Okay.
I think both of them are in paperback and in ebook. And
Great.
I think you can probably find both of them at Barnes & Noble and stuff like that, too.
Great. Oh, the cover on that one is beautiful. On Mech Age of Steel, that is just gorgeous. Oh,
yeah,
yes. Here's,
we're pretty
here's
pleased the, how it turned out.
Here's Rising. Oh, yeah. And I was remembering when the cover reveal of that one came out, too, on the first Kaju Rising. Fabulous cover. Absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, we had Bob Eggleton, who is one of my favorite monster artists, did that cover, the artwork on there.
And everybody will be able to expect more of the same out of the second edition, correct?
The cover artist is different, but you can see the cover right on the Kickstarter page. It's pretty epic. And then in the book, there are some of the same authors, but a lot of brand new authors too. They kind of expanded their horizons a bit with some new folks.
I'm taking a look at the author list now. Yes, you definitely have some incredible stories in there. So what else are you working on? Anything else?
Well, I have an anthology that should be out in the very late spring called Half Moon Fury. It's been a long time in coming because the publisher actually went out of business, and so it was picked up by Outland Entertainment now, who's publishing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, I'm editor of that one, and it has stories, again, Sean and McGuire, Carol Berg, Brad Bollier, Anton Strout, tons and tons of like really super talented people. And that is like one of the projects of my heart. It's a story about women who basically have no F's to give. I hate the term strong female character,
mm-hmm.
but that's basically, you know, along the idea of that, you know, and it's strong women in all the different ways that women can be strong, basically. You know, there's quiet people, there's big warriors, there's a story, Philippa Ballantyne has a story in it with some elderly women who are the heroes. It's really spectacular, the wide range of heroes that are in there.
And that sounds fascinating.
In May or so, that should be on Amazon, and that was funded on Kickstarter a couple of years ago.
And that's called Hath No Fury, H-A-T-H, No
yep.
Fury?
Yep.
That sounds fascinating. This year, I'm part of an anthology called Betrayed, which is all the stories are about crime survivors.
Oh.
And it has a lot of that same thing that, you know, that heroism comes in a lot of different packages.
Yeah.
So that sounds like that one's going to be a really good one too. And then in your spare time, you blog.
Yep.
We already talked about Once in Future podcast. What's Geek Mom about?
Geek Mom is I blog there like once in a while, where I actually blog there and talk about my other blog work.
Well, yeah.
But I do like a weekly, I'm going to be doing like a weekly update that talks about what I did over at the podcast website, and also what the host of the actual podcast, Anton Stroh, what he's been covering there too. And I also have a column there called Geek Speaks Fiction, where I have some guest authors talk about like what made them geek out when they were writing their book.
Oh, really interesting. Like, have you started that one yet?
Well, I had been doing it for a few years. And then over like last year, the last half of last year was just kind of chaotic. So I had kind of let that one fall off a bit and only did the Once in Future podcast blog for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm picking that one back up.
So what's an example of what someone in the past has told you, just geek them out in their book?
Oh, one of the more fun ones was Gregory Wilson was my guest, and he writes fantasy. And one of the things that he geeked out about was Cirque du Soleil. And so he went on about, you know, why he found that interesting and what inspired him about that. Because it's geek, and I don't believe that the only things that people can geek out about are like science fiction and fantasy. I had on a romance author who was talking about baseball because she writes baseball romance. It's just really fun because you can see like how many different things inspire people and how different everyone's process is.
Mm-hmm.
So if people go on to geekmom.com, I think that if you search for Geek Speaks Fiction, some of the past articles will come up on that.
Well, I will definitely check that out because I understand completely mine, and I'll post it on Facebook occasionally. I'll need help from the hive mind is like classic cars. And that type of thing, you know, what would be a really funky car from the 80s that would be good for this character? And of course, you know, I get this huge, you know, 50 comment thread going about it. And it's, and then finally the right one will hit me. It's like, yes, that's it. That's the car she needs, you know, and I'll run off to research it. So I think that sounds like a great column. And now I have to ask, what was the metal eating squirrel?
Well,
I remember it vaguely, but what's the story?
Well, the whole thing started when I met my husband. He said that squirrels hated him. And I mean, I'm like, why would squirrels hate you? That doesn't make any sense. But then as the years go on, I can definitely see how squirrels hate him. In fact, one day I heard him like yell out in the yard, and I looked out the window and he's running across the yard, and there is literally a squirrel chasing him across the yard. And I've seen them throw nuts at him for no reason. Well, at our old house, we had a trash can outside, as most people do. And we had a problem with the animals just chewing through the plastic. It was like a Rubbermaid thing. And so it's like, fine. So we eventually just went and got one of those metal, you know, the old-fashioned, like Oscar the Grouch lives in. Mm-hmm. Trash can, and the freaking thing, I go outside and there's like teeth marks all in it, and it's like there was literally broken metal, like the thing chewed through the lid of the trash can. And I don't know what it thought it would get in there, because I mean, we didn't really throw like food out or anything, so it just was crazy.
I'm having this vision of your husband running across the yard with a squirrel throwing nuts at him. I mean, that's just freaking awesome.
Oh.
And then garden gnomes?
Yeah, I eventually, you know, every now and then I will have a garden gnome arrive in the mail. I would get one named Nomi. Who had a note with him that said that he was traveling the world. And, you know, so I took him on adventures and stuff like that. And then I sent him on, you know, to someone else.
Oh, That's superb.
Continue his voyage. But yeah, I have a whole collection of garden gnomes and stuff, and they wander off sometimes because, you know, I don't know if maybe they find new friends in the neighborhood or something, and
as long as they're not colluding with the squirrels, you should be okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You never know.
They could let a squirrel in the house, and then that would be mayhem would ensue.
Oh, we have had a couple squirrels in the house. Yes. They like to go down our chimney and into the basement.
and that's where they plot against you.
Oh yes.
So just to summarize it, because you're involved in so many projects, you know, typically when I'm talking to an author, you know, it's like, okay, your new book is coming out this week, but you've got the Half No Fury anthology, which will be coming out shortly. Is it available for pre-order yet or anything?
I think you might be able to pre-order it on Amazon. I think it says like a date on there, but I'm not sure how reliable that is just because of all the chaos with changing publishers.
But it'll be coming up shortly.
Yeah.
You've got the Kaju Rising 2, which is currently in its last stages of its Kickstarter.
Yep.
Which obviously, whether or not when that one's coming out depends on whether or not they finish up the campaign is successful, which I know it's almost there. It's this close.
Yep, we're pretty close.
Your latest anthology, Mech Age of Steel, it just came out this last summer? Yeah, came out last summer. And then they can also find your blogs at Once and Future Podcast and at Geek Mom, correct?
Yep.
So obviously you need to get to work on that novel because you're not busy enough.
Right. Oh, but I can't because now I'm co-director of the Gen Con Writers Symposium too. So
what? Quick, tell me about that.
Oh, well, it's a huge writers convention that is part of the Gen Con gaming convention. And we generally, I mean, we have a few thousand people there every year, part of the 60,000 people who attend Gen Con. And so I'm running the writer's track there this year with Kelly Swales. And so right now we're figuring out our paneling and scheduling and all that fun stuff.
And when is that?
That is in the first weekend of August this year.
And is it still in Indianapolis?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And that one, anybody wants to find out about that, just Google Gen Con and your screen will explode. Because I've not been able to get to a Gen Con yet, which, I mean, I'm theoretically within driving distance. The scheduling's never worked out for me. So good luck with that. I mean, why don't you take on BoucherCon too while, you know, you don't have anything else to do?
Yeah.
And are you, other than Gen Con, are you going to be making any conference appearances or attending?
I think the only other one I'm planning on doing this year is BossCon, which is in a couple weeks in Boston. I'm on some panels there.
And what kind of panels?
It's mostly fantasy. So I have I can't remember the exact title, but like the Fantasy Survival Guide, where authors talk about like what characters need to survive their quest and things like that.
And then, of course, you're also can be found. Are you a dungeon master? Do you DM?
I am. Yep. I am the dungeon master over at That's Entertainment in Worcester, Mass.
I have a feeling that is quite the game.
Oh gosh. We definitely have a lot of fun.
I can honestly say I managed to make it all the way to my current age without ever playing Dungeons and Dragons, and I'm just ashamed of myself. Well, no, but I have dealt in a lot of Dungeons and Dragons memorabilia in my antiques and collectibles business, so I have a healthy respect for it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. You will definitely have to come back when some of these other projects start coming to fruition, because it's fun. I love it. Well, I love anthologies anyway. It's one of my favorite, for lack of a better word, genre and format, are anthologies. So I can never hear enough about what's going on with new anthology projects. And good luck finishing up the Kickstarter on Kaiju Rising 2.
Thanks.
And with that one, I'll say good evening to you and let everybody know that this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to stay up to date with the hottest authors who will be served up fresh off the grill. Thank you, everyone, and good night.